Welcome to Cassandra Explains It All, a podcast where we take a magnifying glass to all of our treasures from the past. My guest today needs no introduction. NT Lawyer is your one and only source into the scandalous lives of Hollywood's elite. And in November of 2006, NT Lawyer started a website called Crazy Days and Nights. And the rest was history. What you're about to hear is me picking his brain about everything nostalgia I could think of. And we had a blast. So make sure if you guys want the exclusive interview with Taisha Hampton, you go over to my Patreon at Cassandra Explains It All, patreon.com. And of course, check out the Crazy Days and Nights website and NT Lawyer on every major podcasting platform and patreon.com as well.
Hey, everybody. Welcome today. I have Cassandra joining me, who is a subscriber to the podcast and had some topics that she wanted to discuss. She also has her own podcast. So very Melissa Joan Hartish of you. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm very excited to talk to you. I probably couldn't name one Real Housewife if my life depended on it. So I'm definitely coming to you for the nostalgia vault of blind items.
Everybody can name one housewife.
I know it's sad. I really don't keep up with anything current, but I always find something within your blinds that keeps me hooked.
Well, good. I mean, that's kind of, I enjoy writing them and I enjoy that you like them and that you want to go old school with this. So have at it.
Awesome. Yeah, it's such a crazy adventure starting a nostalgia podcast because I thought it was going to be all sunshine and rainbows and it got so dark. So I guess I want to start with Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Clarissa Explains It All in general, because Melissa Joan Hart is kind of my white whale. Okay. I have interviewed Mitchell Kriegman, the creator of Clarissa, and he seemed really nice. He seemed like he parted ways with Nickelodeon on bad terms, but didn't really get into it. But she's so guarded in interviews. And the only time I really see her out there is when she's talking about Britney, trying to kind of get a little bit of attention. And I was wondering if you have any information on her, or even Soleil Moon Frye, John Brandis, if you want to go that far, anything like that.
Well, Melissa, my favorite story, you might know this one, is that, and she is, she's thirsty, but not as thirsty as she used to be. She used to just want the media desperately to, you know, keep her relevant and things like that. But she was supposed to be on the cover of People magazine the week that Farrah Fawcett died. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And so naturally she didn't get the cover, and they didn't choose to do the cover again the next time, because don't forget, like, Farrah Fawcett died at the same time as Michael Jackson and stuff. And so, Melissa Joan Hart never got that cover, and she was very, very salty about not getting the cover. And I mean, it was like a last minute thing, and she had told people, oh, I'm going to be the cover of People and all this kind of stuff. And then I think even after the Farrah Fawcett that she thought, oh, I'll get it. And she didn't. Soleil is very interesting. There are certain things I can talk about with her and certain things that I can't, because she has been client adjacent, so to speak. So I know some of the things about her business life that I can't discuss. However, what I can talk about is that I'm fairly sure, but not 100% sure, because I try to not dig into Soleil that much because I don't want to cause any conflicts for myself, is that I think, but I'm not sure, that she was cheating on her husband with Seth Binzer. I think. The Kid 90 documentary, I thought was, I enjoyed the heck out of the documentary. I didn't know if I was going to like it. I turned it on and I couldn't stop. And I wish that all documentaries were like that. But then you would have to have a person that was documenting their life the way that she did, and with the diaries and then the video and stuff. And I really thought that she did a great job. I thought that she dropped some tea that nobody knew. Just all the footage of her when she was growing up, I thought was very good. I a lot of people don't know the story that she was actually sued when she was playing Punky Brewster. She was sued, I think, by Columbia Pictures, because NBC had the show for the first couple seasons and it was really popular. People don't realize how popular Punky Brewster was. It was so popular. It was, I'm not sure it was the number one show. However, there were all these spinoffs. There was cartoons. I mean, it was a marketing kind of thing, much similar to the Olsen twins. And what happened was NBC decided to sell the show to Columbia Pictures because they needed the money. And Soleil's team said, no, we don't want to do it now because it's not NBC. And so Columbia sues this 10-year-old kid, basically, for $80 million. And says you need to do this. I mean, the I don't know, the take on it where Columbia Pictures is suing a 10-year-old, but I mean, Columbia said, hey, we had this deal, we wanted the show, and she didn't end up having to pay anything. She agreed just to film for them, and I think it went on a couple of more seasons and stuff. Soleil had a very, from that time basically through her, and she talked about in the documentary, it was a very quiet life. I remember I wouldn't run into her anywhere, and it was just one day at work, somebody said, oh, you know, we're representing Soleil about this and this and this, and it's like, oh, I haven't thought about Soleil Moon Frye in a long time. And she was always very pleasant to talk to and has a very good head for business. And I really appreciate the way that she made herself relevant again. Melissa Joan Hart could probably do the same thing, but as you said, she's a little bit guarded. As much as she wants the attention and the focus, she's a little bit guarded and doesn't want people to go into her personal life. I can't ever imagine her doing the same thing that Soleil Moon Frye did. As far as like Jonathan Brandis, who you mentioned, I mean, I will say that I think that that's my one down thing with Soleil, is I'm pretty sure that she knew that he was being abused and didn't say anything about it then or in the documentary, which I really kind of wish that she had. I've never really thought that he was murdered. It's not one of those kind of things. I think he did commit suicide, but I think there's a lot of questions about that suicide, and I don't think that people have talked about it enough. I don't think that people have talked about what happened between he and Bryan Singer and what happened and which forced him to do that. It was a very public hanging, and just a tragic end to his life. So
thank you so much for addressing that, NT, because that's one that we talk about a lot, is John Brandis and just all, and how much it doesn't really get recognized enough. So I appreciate that.
Well, I think that a lot of people don't remember him, obviously. People don't remember Melissa Joan Hart. I mean, she's been on some things, obviously. And she does, you know, Hallmark movies if she can get the chance, or Lifetime or whatever. But it would be the same thing as like a Lacey Chabert or something like that. And if Candace Cameron Bure hadn't done the Fuller House reboot, I think she'd be in the same kind of place. It just, how do you come back and get people to notice you and talk about you and bring up stuff? And the Jonathan Brandis, it was sad. And if you think about it, there's a lot of bad things. As you said, you know, you went on a nostalgia thing and you thought it was going to be unicorns and rainbows. And the 90s is dark. I mean, it is really dark, because there was a lot of things going on and we didn't have social media. We didn't, you know, we didn't have MySpace yet or anything like that. It was just, everything was, if you think about the things that Soleil talked about in the documentary, every single one of those things would have been on TMZ in a second, but they weren't. And she right. got to keep it a secret for 30 years.
Yeah. And that documentary, if anybody out there hasn't seen it, you should definitely watch it. It's absolutely worth a watch. It's amazing. I think I've seen it like 3 times now. It's called Kid 90.
It is.
And yeah, and I've got some baby tea, but in case anybody cares, Melissa Joan Hart did sign a 4-movie deal with Lifetime. So her first one was Dirty Little Secret that just came out, where she was a hoarder. So she does have three movies left to go. And I think it's odd that she left Los Angeles and now lives in, I think, Tennessee. I wondered if, like, I don't know if there's a reason behind that or not. I don't know, but
taxes.
Oh, okay. Maybe her husband's stepping out and she needs to get him somewhere. I don't know.
No, taxes, because I don't think Tennessee has a state income tax. So, you know, that's going to save her 10 to 15% of her money. So that's probably why.
Very interesting. And then David Lesher was on that show with her as well. Sabrina, he played Josh, and he was also a little Nickelodeon connection. He played on Hey Dude, with Christine Taylor, who's in everything and amazing. He told me that they're working on something together. Any like idea or guess what that might be?
I don't know, but it is interesting because they dated while during Hey Dude or whatever. So, you know, rekindling an old relationship, and then Christine gets back together with Ben, and then I guess it's okay to go work with David. I don't know what it is exactly. You know, people work together all the time and it doesn't necessarily amount to anything. But if you have Christine attached, it helps, for sure. And then obviously if she can get her husband to come in, that would help a little bit too. But people, you know, collaborate all the time. It doesn't necessarily mean that something's going on. The only thing I ever keep Christine in my mind about is her marriage and stuff. So, but I do know that she did date David back in the day. So that's interesting. And it would be nice if they worked together again.
Maybe it's just a podcast, like the Boy Meets World podcast, right?
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants a podcast.
Yes. So that's my next question, NT, is what is going on with the Pod Meets World podcast extravaganza where Ben Savage is not involved in any way, shape, or form? And he just announced that he's running for some type of government office in West Hollywood today.
Yeah, I didn't see that today. I have been very busy today. But it wouldn't shock me. I mean, Ben, just because you're siblings doesn't mean that you necessarily get along. And I've always thought that Ben wanted to be more out of the spotlight. So it doesn't surprise me that he doesn't want anything to do with, especially if you're going to run for political office, then, you know, Fred is not the person that you want to be associated with. You want to kind of distance yourself as much as possible. And I mean, Fred Savage has had a nice 40-year career of being abusive to women. So, you know, do you want that associated with your political campaign?
Right. Well, and I wondered, as soon as I found out that he wasn't going to be involved with the podcast, that's what I thought of. I thought, I wonder if it's because he knows that things are eventually going to come to surface with Fred, which they have, like within just the last week. There's more articles coming out about him having an apartment in Atlanta where he was having a young girl live with him from the new Wonder Years reboot. So
yeah. And I think he's still married. I don't recall that I've ever seen like a divorce announcement or anything like that, which makes it all the more bizarre. But I mean, it goes back to Wonder Years, right? When the, who was it? The costume designer or whatever, who was on the show, who basically she accused Fred Savage and she accused Jason Hervey of, you know, verbally and sexually harassing her. And so what happened? Well, you're not going to fire the stars. So they fired, you know, the costumer. And one of the things that is very consistent with Fred Savage's response to, whether it's that or what happened on Grindr, what happened on the new Wonder Years, is it's always, no, I didn't do anything. It's an employee who's disgruntled and stuff. And I mean, it's the same thing. The Grindr one was also somebody who worked in the wardrobe department. And she said that, you know, that Fred had assaulted her and that he was aggressive and would intimidate her and stuff. And she filed a lawsuit and Fred was like, no, it's not true. Another disgruntled employee and stuff. But okay, well, we had this and then we had Grindr and then the Wonder Years reboot. And it wasn't even so much the Wonder Years reboot, but I will say that whatever they're calling themselves now, 20th century, they said that my thought is that they said, okay, well, look, Grindr, because I believe that was also their production, we'll give you another shot. But if you do anything, step out of line, you're fired, you know, that second. And I think that's exactly what happened. And to their credit, as soon as somebody complained, they did the investigation, they said he's gone, and that he would intimidate people. He wanted them to stay with him. You talked earlier about the person in Atlantis, much, much younger person who he would give gifts and money to stay there. And there was one woman who accused him of trying to get that woman fired because she was trying to keep him away from the younger person. And, but there's stories that aren't even on the set. You know, there's the woman who said that Fred ran into her at a bar or something, and she had worked on the show, but didn't anymore. And he, you know, sexually assaulted her in the bathroom and tried to grope her and stuff. And then later tried to apologize. Oh, you know, I was being a jerk and stuff like that. And so it shows that it's not just on the set. It's just, hey, you know, I'm Fred Savage. I'm a star. I can get away with anything and you can't do anything about it. But again, I haven't seen anything where he's divorced or anything. And it's really, what is his wife? Oh, that's fine. You know, he can go sexually assault people. I'm just happy to be here. It's a bad look.
It's terrible. He does. He has a wife and three kids. And 3 months ago, he went on a campaign with Ben for these Goldfish Megabytes. And they did probably 30 interviews in one day to promote them. And he came off very unhinged. And I knew when I saw those Goldfish commercials, something was about to pop off. And I'm really waiting to see the age of the girl, because if she's 22, I mean, I don't know. He's a cheating bastard, I guess.
But here's where we have to ask this question. He's a bastard, we'll say that. And he's an a-hole, we'll say that. But what if he and his wife have an open relationship? Then he's not a cheater, right?
Right.
So when it gets to this point where nothing has happened, then I think, okay. But at the same time, the wife has to say, okay, well, this is going to reflect, I don't want our children to think that this is acceptable. So perhaps I should divorce him and make a, you know, split. So that way they're not seeing this or associate this with their dad. And I don't want them to be around this. I need to show some backbone and get away from it all. Because at this point, it just looks really, really bad.
It's definitely not surprising. They're television royalty, I feel like, the Savage Brothers. And it surprises me, honestly, that more like horrible things haven't come out about Ben. And I'm happily surprised. And I don't know if this is too obscure for people, but Neil Marlin and Carol Black, who were the writers and creators of Growing Pains, also were the writers and creators of Boy Meets World. And they left Boy Meets World abruptly in season 3. They said for personal reasons, and every description of them I can find just says that they were deeply private people. I mean, is there anything going on there? Weird?
I don't think so. I mean,
okay.
They also created Growing Pains.
Growing Pains is kind of a weird set, I feel like.
Growing Pains is one of the, I'm surprised I haven't done a deep dive on Growing Pains, honestly, just because of all the people that are involved, whether it's Kirk Cameron or Tracy Gold or what have. I mean, I've talked about it a little bit with Alan Thicke, and I've talked a little bit about Growing Pains because just people ask questions and stuff, obviously. But it came up obviously a few years ago because Stephen Marshall, who was executive producer on Growing Pains, was convicted of child porn. And Kirk Cameron threatened ABC all the time. But one of the things he said, well, you know, three of the producers are pornographers and, you know, I want them gone. ABC did not fire them. They quit. Now, neither of the other two were Neil or Carol. They were, what's her name? Michael Sullivan and another guy. Okay. I can't think of the top of my head, but it's not Neil and Carol Black. Now, you know, Michael and this other guy, they've never been accused of child porn. He just said, you know, pornographers. But Stephen Marshall obviously was convicted of child porn. But there were a lot of horrible people on that set, whether it's like Bob Villard, who is this publicist who's a pedophile. And so when you have this kind of situation where you have a guy who was convicted of child porn, then you have another guy who's convicted of pedophilia, and then you have somebody like Brian Peck who's on the set interacting like with Leonardo DiCaprio and stuff, and it makes you wonder, gosh, how bad was this set? And Bob Villard, he interacted with a lot of young men, teens, and just a horrible person. So the set was just contaminated. And I know I've talked before, maybe it was an Alan Thicke died, but you know, Alan Thicke wasn't the person that was supposed to be the dad. It was supposed to be Dan Loria, the guy from Wonder Years.
Oh, wow.
Because he was dating Joanna Kearns when Neil was casting for Growing Pains. And Joanna, you know, called Neil and said, hey, Dan can't seem to get an audition. So Dan got the audition. And Alan Thicke was not going to be on the show, but then Dan didn't work out or whatever. So Alan Thicke got it. The whole show, when you look, you didn't really see it again because the tabloids really didn't go after Kirk Cameron. They really didn't go after the show because, you know, it's kids. And so tabloids left it alone. And at that time, your only source for any kind of gossip that was scandalous was probably going to be the tabloids, especially if it was dealing something like this. But Kirk was absolutely hated. Absolutely 100%. He would imagine this teenager, and the writers are writing and they write stuff, and then Kirk looks at it, goes, nope, don't like this. Nope, there's an innuendo here, sexual innuendo. So I'm going to call all your bosses at ABC and tell them I'm not going to work this week unless you get rid of it. Every single week. And so then the writers would not have any sexual innuendo, and they would write some other things that Kirk goes, I don't like that joke. I'm going to call your bosses, whatever. Every single week. And it took so long for the writers to get everything approved by Kirk Cameron each week that the show was always rushed when they wanted to tape and stuff. It's not like these producers were, I mean, the writers were doing anything bad or whatever. I mean, Alan Thicke hated going to work every single day because of Kirk, and said, you know, maybe what you need to do is go do some kind of what Kirk does now, you know, make spiritual, right, religious kind of movies. Maybe that would be better for you. But my all-time hate for Kirk Cameron comes, by the way, because of the way he treated Julie McCullough, who I've known forever, and who gives a very differing account of how she ended up leaving the show.
Yes.
And if you don't know who Julie McCullough is, she was in Playboy a few times and before the show. And then I don't remember if it was before the show or not, but she made a movie, like a soft porn Cinemax kind of movie called Big Bad Mama. And I don't know if it's Big Bad Mama 2 or Big Bad Mama. I can't remember, but it had Angie Dickinson in it. And I believe that there were a couple of sex scenes in it. I can't remember if that was before Growing Pains or not, but everybody who hired her knew about the Playboy and her being in it. It hadn't been just once. She had been in it 4 or 5 times, had been a centerfold and stuff. And Kirk Cameron hears about it and he goes ballistic and wants her fired. She's only been on 8 episodes. She is extremely popular, an extremely popular character on the show. And I mean, tested through the roof. Everybody loves her. Everybody loves working with her. And there was this huge fight, but she gets fired because Kirk said that he would quit. And then kind of goes by the wayside. We don't really hear anything about it very much until Kirk writes his autobiography. And he said, oh, you know what? Julie wasn't supposed to be in the show that long. She was only supposed to be in it for 8 episodes. And it wasn't ever going to work because the two didn't go together well, but they did. The audiences loved them as a couple. The producers were like, why are you screwing this up? You know, it's really great. We got it. you know, I understand that he wanted his current girlfriend in there or whatever, but that wasn't what this was about. And then Kirk later has apologized basically for being such a jerk and apologized to the main cast, never has apologized to Julie ever. Whenever they run into each other for whatever reason, he ignores her. And then she hasn't done it in a while, but she used to trash the hell out of him all the time. And, you know, because he told her that she was going to go to hell for what she did and all this kind of stuff. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop with Kirk Cameron because he's so self-righteous. And I know that, well, I learned from Jeanette McCurdy's book that his mom was running the talent agency that Jeanette McCurdy was going through. And I found that very interesting.
You see that a lot with stars from the 80s and 90s. And even Ariel Winter's mom, I was trying to think. Same kind of thing where an Ariel Winter sister runs an agency. I think you'll see that a lot back then, because then they would, you know, obviously put their kids forward. You don't see it as much anymore, but that was not unusual to have a parent. And you always, if you see a parent who has more than one child, like Kirk had one, you know, had a job, Candace, if you see a bunch of kids from the same family, it's probably because of that, or because they had somebody in the industry. If you look at the Culkin kids, it's because of Bonnie Bedelia, who, you know, was always talking them up and saying, oh, you should put, you know, my nephews in this stuff and everything. And so back then it was more of a, everybody thinks that Hollywood is, you know, filled with nepotism, which it is. But at that time it was just, oh, well, we can do a favor for somebody. Oh, the kid's good looking. Yeah, we can make it work. Right. So you would see a lot more of that than you see now.
Yeah. And poor Tracy Gold is often a institution because of her anorexia by the end of the show. I mean, I would love a Growing Pains deep dive. I could listen to hours of Growing Pains, blind items or just lore, because I really want to know what was going on with Alan Thicke, and was he really creepy and all of it.
I don't think that he was all that creepy. Tracy was also not the original Tracy. But speaking of Tracy, you know, that's another one where, because her sister was on Benson at the same time. So you always had these siblings. It was just like, oh, well, we know how one does. That's great. We'll just hire the other. You could just go through all the sitcoms that were on right then and you go, oh, they're related. They're related. They're related. They're related. And it was just much easier for the casting people to deal with one stage parent rather than two. But at the same time, if you have two kids who are on two separate shows filming on two separate lots, then generally it was only one parent that was, you know, because you weren't getting paid a fortune unless you were a huge star. So the other parent who wasn't watching the kids would work or often not even be in Los Angeles and be back in some other city where they had a job. And that leads to no accountability and not being watched. And then that's when bad things happen. And you will also see a lot of these things where, like Tracy's sister, she's in one thing and never again, because of, you know, whatever happened on the set of Benson. And you'll find that a lot in these 80s and 90s. You'll go, gosh, that person had, you know, a great role. They were on there 4 or 5 years. What happened to them? And if you go find them, oftentimes they will say, it was a horrific environment and I never wanted to do it again, which is, you know, the antithesis of what happens now, where everybody tries to stick around no matter what forever and ever. And that wasn't the case back then.
Right. Yep, exactly. And I've interviewed a couple of actors from the Nickelodeon era, and what they tell me on mic and what they tell me off mic is vastly different most of the time. So,
and when you talk to a Nickelodeon actor, it's different than talking to a Nickelodeon actress. Now this is not the same for, if you talk to, you know, actors who are on Growing Pains or some of the other things with Villard or whatever, they'll have a different story. But with Nickelodeon, all of those actors will go, I didn't see anything going on. Oh, I didn't see this. I didn't see that. For the most part, that's what they'll say, because they, in this case of Nickelodeon, it wasn't same-sex kind of grooming or whatever. It was, hey, I'm going out to these tween teen girls. And so the guys, whether they wanted to close their eyes to it or, you know, it just, it wasn't the same kind of situation on Nickelodeon as it was, say, with some of the other networks.
Exactly. And I guess I'll jump to this question because we're on the topic anyways, because I had just interviewed Kel Mitchell's ex-wife, Taisha Hampton, his first wife. And she alleges like some pretty wild stuff. I mean, physical abuse. She says that he owes her millions of dollars in back child support. He did voodoo. I mean, the list goes on and on. And honestly, she does seem educated and just so passionate and sweet and like a genuine person. And she had a lot to say about things she saw behind the scenes at Nickelodeon, and she named a lot of names. And I'm just wondering if you heard anything about that or what you think about all that.
Well, I mean, Taisha is not one to ever not speak her mind. The famous story. I don't know if you guys talked about it. I know you sent it over, but I hadn't a chance to listen. But I don't know if she told you the Nick Cannon story. Did you guys talk about that at all?
We've talked about it on the phone before, but she did. We did talk about other things going on the set of all that, but we didn't get into that story.
Well, no, but so she came home one day and she finds Nick Cannon in complete cheerleader outfit on the bed with Kel. And, you know, that I always have found very interesting. She's never said much beyond that about it. Here, Taisha and Kel were married a good solid decade, right? And Taisha has taken the opportunity to trash Kel whenever she has the opportunity. Kel, I think he's a pastor now. I believe he's been married 3 or 4 times, something like that, maybe more. There was a lot of physical abuse. There was a lot of verbal abuse. She has said that he hit her. I don't think there were any charges brought, but she has said that he hit her and would throw things and has choked her and stuff like that, has been violent. He blames it all on the drugs and everything else that he was doing at the time. The one thing that, and I don't know if you guys really discussed it or not, I know that she's always said that, hey, he owes me a bunch of money. It was really interesting how that all happened, where she was supposed to get child support and then he went to court or to the police or somebody and said, well, look, she's making $1 million a year. And so she shouldn't be getting any child support. I should be getting money. And she was on disability or something. And that's Medi-Cal, which is California. It's basically, if you don't have any money, California, basically it's healthcare for all. And that she got removed from that program. One of their kids needed a surgery or something, and then she had to pay for it herself. So every so often, every couple of years, Taisha, you know, goes on a rant about Kel, and it's always nice to see that, and it gives you something to read. Her story hasn't really changed. There haven't been a whole lot of new details over the past few years, but it's it is something that I would definitely want to listen to. And it felt like she was being controlled by him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like telling her to do things like, hey, what you should do is give your brother a car, so that way, you know, he could drive you. But then, I don't want him to drive you. What you need to do is you need to be on set with me. You can never leave the set. You have to be here all the time. You're not allowed to go out with any other guys. You're not allowed to work with any other guys. You need to be here. But then when she stopped working because he wanted her on the set with him all the time, is that then he would get angry at her for not making any money and, you know, all these kind of things. I mean, this was quite the show. And you know, Kenan now is getting divorced and we're hearing stories about that relationship. So it is
interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting that he's trying to be Kirk Cameron, right? He's Pastor Kel Mitchell now, and he works for Spirit Food Christian Center, which is a church in California. When he mentioned one time during a stand-up bit that the audio or their music production person used to work for R. Kelly, and like made a joke about it. I'm just like, you know, you're weird, Kel. And I've also seen videos of you talking in tongues. So I'm just going to believe Taisha on this one.
But you know what he's trying to do is he's trying to make a buck.
Right. And it's the grift, right?
It's the grift. And I would, to me, it's as much as I dislike Kirk Cameron. I don't think that Kirk Cameron's in it for the grift. I think that he actually, because he doesn't really need the money, I think he's in it too because he totally 100% believes everything that he says. And so he's in it to make movies that he feels are appropriate for families and stuff. And he's not in it for the grift. Kel 1000%
agree.
Yeah. Kel is in it just for Kel and, you know, wants to be a prosperity pastor. It is becoming actually kind of, well, it's not common, but I feel as if some Hollywood people have kind of said, you know what, I can make a living doing this kind of thing. And there's an angle here. And because I have a little bit of celebrity, a little bit of fame, people will follow me and listen to me. So let me try and make a few bucks off some followers. Different again than somebody like Jared Leto, who's just trying to start a cult and do something different, or Ezra Miller, who also wants to have a cult and is just awful with stuff where they want to influence people in different ways. Cal's like, I'll start a church. Oh, I can speak in tongues. And that's not a problem. Yeah. But the thing is, it kind of works for him in the sense that if you take a poll, people will say, okay, well, Taisha, you know, it's been forever. Maybe you could let it go now. And they'll say, Kel has changed his life. You know, he used to be addicted to drugs and alcohol and he's not anymore. So maybe this is just something he talked to God about. And this is, you know, what his new life is. And we should support him because he's doing good. And then people will point out, well, you know, he's on like his fourth wife or fifth wife and can't keep track of all the kids he has and everything. And perhaps he is not living the most holy of lives in front of us. So.
Yeah, it's pretty damning when his like kids that are over the age of 18 don't want anything to do with him. It's sad. But he'll never be. He's no Kirk Cameron.
No, he's not a Kirk Cameron.
But yes, Auntie, there's nothing I love more than a toxic man. Obviously, from all the subjects I've selected, you can already tell. So for me, it's Shia. And so Shia and Chrissy Carlson Romano, I sent you this one. I said, let's do Even Stevens. And so Chrissy Carlson Romano, you know, she seems like she's just losing her mind in real time on the internet. I'm really not sure what's happening there. She's in Texas. She was doing these great videos where she was walking and vlogging and I loved it. And then she was going off the deep end in a great way. And then it kind of pivoted into something else and it got weird. And then Shia, of course, he's got a sexual battery charge coming up April 17th, 2023 is when he has court with FKA Twigs.
Yeah. Christy, I've known her a long time. And she has always, because of Kim Possible, has always made a living doing Comic Cons and stuff and done pretty well. The reason she lives in Texas is because of her husband. She had always lived in LA. And then when they got married, they eventually moved to Texas. So that's fine. That's understandable. And I get it. You know, she lost a whole bunch of money because she got conned out of it at one point. I mean, she lost most of the money that she had earned. So, you know, you think about, okay, well, I can't really get a ton of work. And I blew all my money because I got ripped off. So how do I make money? And I think that for a while, she tried to go the Melissa Joan Hart route. She really couldn't get the same kind of gigs as Melissa because she was a cartoon character for the most part. Yes, Even Stevens, no, but Kim Possible, which she's most famous for, you know, as a cartoon. And so she wasn't getting even like Disney gigs, Hallmark gigs and stuff. So how can I make a living? What can I do? And she had some efforts at YouTube shows and, you know, cooking on YouTube and just trying whatever she could, doing the hustle. And I totally respect a good hustle. and just trying and trying and trying. Nothing was working. And then one day she's in her car or whatever, she's getting Starbucks and does the video, and it just takes off. Like no kind of amount of fame that she has had ever. Just boom, here you go. And you are, Gen Z knows who you are now, have at it. And the videos were totally relatable. One of the things that people like on TikTok is if it seems like it's off the cuff. And most of hers were, because she's out running errands. So I'm just going to tell you a story. And here it is. So she does that, right? She's got this fame to go with it. And then what happens is, I think that she doubled down too hard, too soon, and should have just kept with the videos, because she's getting interviews. People want to talk to her. She's getting her name out there. And that's when, you know, maybe she can get some acting roles, maybe do some things. But instead, she just kind of goes for broke, gives up on those. And now she's got, you know, a podcast and everything, and with her former co-star. But one of the things that she's always been hesitant to do, even prior to the videos, was really talk anything about Shia. Because I think that she was under the impression that perhaps at some point in time, there would be an Even Stevens reunion show, like a reboot.
No, it was never big enough for that to happen.
It was never big enough. However, with the whole, you know, Fuller House, all that, everything like that, I think that she thought perhaps that there would be a reboot. So I'm not going to say anything bad about Shia, because if they get Shia to come back, he is going to have, you know, this. At the same time, maybe Shia doesn't come back, but she gets to come back and they have a show based around her. So I don't think that she really wanted to go off on Shia. And she's never really said anything other than the fact that, you know, because they played brother and sister, maybe she treated him too much like a sister and didn't really get to know him. And can't say that she was really ever friends with him, that they just had really good chemistry on screen. You never know how something's going to play out when you become, when you get that second chance at fame. And I don't know why she steered away from that. Maybe she got some advice saying, oh, well, you know, you don't want to spill a bunch of dirt about people. Yeah, I get that. But nobody in Hollywood's really going to care if you're spilling dirt about stuff that happened 30 years ago.
Right. So, I mean, one of her videos was just her cleaning out her storage unit, and she had, you know, a medal she had gotten from when she met the president when she in the 90s. And I'm just like, I could watch this all day. I love this.
Right. It's exactly like Kid 90, except for the fact that there's no footage or whatever. She's just telling stories. But everybody likes those kind of stories because it's stuff that they've never heard before. And it's only 3 minutes at a time. She could have made this last forever at 3 minutes a shot. And it's kind of, she just kind of put all her cards, you know, all her chips on the table, and it just, for whatever reason, has not worked. And as far as like Shia and the FKA thing, I got to think that it's going to settle. And here's why. You know, they always have mandatory settlement conferences before trials, and I don't see this one going to trial. I think that Shia will write a check and do some things. And FKA has to also think to herself, okay, well, in some of these filings, Shia has basically been a Johnny Depp or Marilyn Manson and is really accusing me of some things and saying that, you know, I'm lying and maybe he's going to put me on the stand and I'm not going to look like the perfect victim. And that's not something that FKA necessarily wants, or to have her life dragged through, you know, the court system, and perhaps it will be on television. And that's not exactly what I want. And Shia, what is, he has had so many horrible things that he has done, said, that have been caught on video or recordings or whatever. Has it affected him whatsoever? No.
No.
Absolutely not. He has more lives than anybody I know. He does everything wrong. He treats people horribly. He can be racist. He can be drunk. He can beat up people. He can beat up women. Oh, here I am. You know, look, yeah, I beat up Mia. I chased her around in Germany. She had to go into a stranger's car or whatever, but look, she took me back. We have a baby together now. And So of course I couldn't be that bad, and I've cleaned up my life, which is why she came back. And I don't know why FKA is saying these kind of things and just making her look bad. So I think that it will settle. I don't think it will settle until probably 2 weeks before the trial, because there's just nothing to do between now and then. That's just when the earliest trial date. I haven't looked at the case number to see when the mandatory settlement conference is scheduled. But if anybody has the case number and you look it up and you can see the date, because it'll show you the date of that hearing for the mandatory settlement conference, and then the return from it, when they return from it, whatever the date is, which will probably be a couple weeks before the trial, they'll announce a settlement. So that's, I think that that's what's going to happen with that case.
Interesting. Yeah. And I'll be sad to see if it does, I guess. I mean, not really, but I would hope that she gets some kind of justice. I mean, the stuff that she goes into detail about was pretty upsetting. And yeah, he just had this baby with Mia Goth, and he's about to star in a movie where he's a saint. I mean, it's just so surreal. I can't.
But what he has going for him is the fact that he was a child star, right? That he was in Even Stevens and Loved, that he was in Holes and Loved, that he has all these roles that he did that people even today in Gen Z, they'll watch just because it's a teen thing and it'll be on Disney or something like that. And so people go, oh yeah, he's such a nice guy. Oh, and they won't bother to see the clips of him in Georgia calling, you know, people racist names and stuff, mm-hmm. or being publicly drunk, or though they won't read up on what happened to Mia. And they'll just say, but it's Shia. He's just a guy. And, you know, he's method a little bit. He's a method actor. And that's why he's like this. And we haven't even talked about the creepy relationship that he has with his mom, which used to be the mainstay. The things that he has said about his mom, and that he wished that, you know, his mom wasn't his mom so he could marry her. And this is not something he said when he was 4 years old. You know, this is something that he said when he was an adult. So.
Yes, I remember him talking about learning sexuality from his mother. And I found that very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he'll continue to work, I'm sure, which is amazing. So I guess my next question is going to be, maybe this is too much of a throwback, but if you grew up in the 90s, everybody probably knows what Loveline is. And I'm like a diehard Loveline junkie, loved them, grew up listening to them, Dr. Drew and Adam. And then, of course, I went to search for them as an adult and was not pleased with what I found. Dr. Drew does make waves in the teen mom world here and there, which is interesting. But is there anything interesting going on behind the scenes with those two?
I have a long and storied history with Dr. Drew.
Really? Oh, that's so awesome.
No, I mean, I'm a lot of interactions with Dr. Drew over the years. What can I say about Dr. Drew? You know, one of the things that he's somehow managed to kind of skate by also. I think that the only time that he was really called out for anything was at the beginning of COVID, because if you go back like a decade ago, he was shilling for Big Pharma and taking a bunch of money from them and not telling people in interviews and stuff that he was taking money from these pharmaceutical companies. And he was saying, look, I'm a doctor. You know, I deal with a lot of, you know, depression. I deal with a lot of, you know, what you need to do is you need to take, you know, Wellbutrin or whatever. It's going to be wonderful for you. It's going to change, you know, your kid's life. Meanwhile, not saying that, hey, I'm getting paid like $300,000 every few months from this company to do this. And so the company got fined for, you know, hiring all these doctors or whatever, but none of the doctors going on TV saying these things were like that. I didn't, if you listened to Loveline, then you would know that basically, how should I put this? I feel like every female that came on that show was subject to abuse by him and subject to pigeonholing, stereotyping. If you were a girl who came on that show and you had like a higher pitched voice, say, you know, like kind of like, I don't want to say a baby voice, but kind of like that, like a higher pitched voice. He was 100% convinced every single time that you had been sexually abused as a child and would not let up on you until you admitted that you had been sexually abused. That was not the only time. The other times was his philosophy that if a girl had more than two piercings, that she had been sexually abused as a child. One of his favorite things was like, oh, do you have your ears pierced? Yeah. Do you have anything else pierced? You know, my belly button, where you were definitely sexually abused as a child. And would just hound them and until they just basically said, hey, yeah, I guess I was. I find the same kind of, if you look between the lines on a lot of these Teen Mom interviews, he is a horrible doctor who, by the way, couldn't even take care of his own kids because some of them ended up in rehab. But there was Tyler, and he made Tyler apologize for Tyler's mental health issues because he had wanted to have a break from Caitlin. And he's like telling Tyler that he's an awful human. Tyler said, I'm having mental health issues. And Dr. Drew goes, that doesn't matter or whatever. And he did the same thing with Gary. And, you know, he used to just trash Farrah, not Farrah, like 25-year-old Farrah, but 16 and 17-year-old Farrah. I mean, on the very first Teen Mom, he went after Farrah. She was like, okay, look, I'm 17 years old or whatever. I don't know if I can take care of my daughter. Maybe I need to leave my baby with my mother, which would also been a horrible idea. And he just went after her. And there was, when David was, when he first, I don't know, started dating Janelle or whatever, was on the reunion show. And Dr. Drew said something to the effect of, I'm so great that you, you know, subdued Janelle and, you know, basically caged her. And now you have her under your control. And I was like,
yes,
dude, what is wrong with you? And also he uses so much Botox that it's crazy. I've never liked Dr. Drew. I've had so many interactions with him. None of my interactions with him have ever led me to change my opinion. Dozens and dozens of times I have zero changing of my opinion. I do not like him. I think he's a quack. I think that he treats people horribly, that he thinks that he's a better doctor than anybody on this earth. I think he gives terrible advice. I think that he just wants to be famous. And that is Dr. Drew. With Adam, it's a different kind of thing. First of all, disclaimer, the best stand-up comedy extravaganza I've ever seen in my life was at Adam Carolla's house. Where he had a whole bunch of comics. I mean, literally everybody was at his house in Malibu, and there was maybe 100 people there, and it was the greatest comedy show I've ever seen. So that being said, I feel as if Adam is kind of stuck back in the man show days and can't quite figure out how to get beyond that. It's almost like he wants to be Joe Rogan, but can't quite figure out how to do that part of it. And is just kind of living off, not Loveline, but just can't get off the man show thing. And, you know, for the longest time when Jimmy Kimmel couldn't get guests and stuff, I mean, Adam Carolla was on that show 40, 50 times, but he hasn't been back in 3 or 4 years. So Jimmy has kind of said, you know, we're going to have to take a break. But at the same time, if you ask the Kimmel show, oh, will he ever be back or whatever? And they'll say, they won't say anything. Adam is just a guy trying to find his place and to get traction saying the things that he does, which have worked for a lot of people, but he just doesn't catch on. And it doesn't seem, I feel like he's trying too hard to be Joe Rogan rather than just being Adam Carolla. And being Loveline Adam Carolla, where he's the, you know, tossing out jokes and everything, and just enjoying. And I, you know, to me, Adam Carolla was the most enjoyable part of Loveline, other than the callers, because you needed that sense of humor to go with the horrible takes of Dr. Drew. And it's tough to reinvent yourself, and it's tough to kind of move beyond where you were. If you watch The Man Show, that show would never get made now.
And, right. Well, he might try and remake it. Let's be honest. He was very relatable when he was on Loveline because he had just started making money. And now he's almost, you know, comes off like he wants to present like Larry David, but it's like, that's not your vibe.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. I always felt like it's more of a Joe Rogan thing, but I could see the Larry David. He's a cranky guy and who doesn't like cancel culture, which I also agree with, because I think cancel culture can go too far. And where's the line on cancel culture? You know, I don't know if he would say that Shia LaBeouf needs to be canceled. I would say that Shia LaBeouf needs to be canceled, but that's never going to happen. And if enough people say, well, he's not going to get canceled, and who really is canceled for all time or anything? I mean, Mel Gibson, no, he's not canceled. Kevin Spacey, you know, there's some more things, but he had almost broken free. It just, there's so many people who are horrific. And if you think about all the people since November 2017, when Harvey was first publicly finally flayed like he should have been, the only people that have really not come back from that is Harvey and Bryan Singer. Everybody else who's been Me Too'd or, you know, Time's Up or anything like that, they're all still working.
Right, right. Yeah, and actually, well, two things, I guess, just to bring it back to Taisha. It's amazing to me that people like Kanye and Shia are just walking around free out here, but yet, you know, we've got Amanda Bynes being put in a conservatorship. It's, and Britney, I just think that obviously there's not the same standard for women celebrities as there is for men celebrities, and the route to getting to that money. But with Loveline, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I, for my podcast, because I do a lot of nostalgia, there's two things I do for every movie I watch or show I watch. And it's, I go search your podcast web app to see if there's any crossover that I can listen to. And then I look for the Loveline episode, where like there's a Loveline episode where Melissa Joan Hart comes on and talks about doing ecstasy and things like that. And those are always really fun. But Marilyn Manson was a frequent guest of theirs. So I called Dr. Drew on his like Twitter call-in show a year ago and asked him, I was like, do you like, what do you think of all the news that's coming out about Marilyn Manson? And he's like, oh, I don't think, you know, he didn't give me that vibe at all. I thought he was just perfectly nice. And you just can't believe everything you read. So.
See, and that's trouble, because that is going to be, you know, that is going to be more so. I mentioned it with Cheyenne FK Twigs, but Marilyn Manson is going to try and destroy Evan Rachel Wood. And it is, there is nothing redeemable about Marilyn Manson at all. I understand that people, when they're talking about Johnny Depp, and they're like, okay, well, look, he was this, and they have this image of Johnny Depp when he was, you know, eating Gilbert Grape and all these things, and even Captain Jack and all this stuff. And they have this in their mind, much the same way they have Shia in their mind as even Stevens or Holes or whatever, and all these roles that they liked. There's nothing to like about Marilyn Manson, because you can, there are so many things, and I really just do not want this to become that kind of situation with Marilyn Manson and the things that he has done, the things that he did with Dita Von Teese, just, and to all the people, you know, obviously I've had one of his victims on before, who to this day, you know, if I talk to Bianca about it or whatever, her whole life has just been totally ruined by him, and her whole focus on everything that she does still kind of relates back to that, and how she's still trying to cope and how she's still trying to work through everything. And to have that kind of situation all these years later, and, you know, but they're going to go after Evan, and they're going to say, well, she manipulated this stuff and she did this. And so, you know, she's not right. And, you know, I should be totally vindicated, kind of thing. So We shall see. But to say Dr. Drew, to say that, it's just, again, that's mm-hmm. Dr. Drew being Dr. Drew. And he never has a kind word to say about victims, I don't think. And he just assumes that, like I said, that all women that had been sexually abused and stuff, and it was just over and over and over. And I used to listen to it a lot because I used to be in the car late at night, and I think came on in LA at, like, I don't know, I would listen to it 9-10 o'clock at night or whatever on K-Rock. And it just, every single night was the same kind of thing. And it just always stuck with me that he was always saying that somebody had been sexually abused. And it just, oh, dude, not everybody who, you know, fits this criteria or whatever. And you just badger them to death and it's not interesting. And, you know, the only good part was if they had gas and when Adam Carolla would make everybody laugh.
Yeah, I what do you think that the love line or the Adam Carolla blind item is going to be when one finally happens?
Oh, I don't think that there will be. Like, I mean, he and his wife split and there wasn't really anything. I think there's redemption for Adam Carolla. I know people say, oh, you shouldn't listen to him or whatever. And he says these asinine things or whatever, and yeah, he does, but they're not end of the world type things. And I think that he needs to find something and go back. Maybe he needs, as much as I hate Dr. Drew and stuff, maybe the two of them need to go back and do Loveline again and
right.
and do that. And maybe it would be redemption for both of them. It would introduce new audiences or whatever. And we have completely different things than we did 20 years ago when Loveline was at its prime. So, you know, maybe they need to do that. I think that people would listen. The problem that you would have is nobody listens to the radio anymore. So, you know, nobody's calling in and, hey, it would have to be as a podcast situation. Would people call in? Maybe they could do them live, but I think that if they had some kind of Loveline reunion, and even if they did it online, like on Twitter or something like that, I think a ton of people would tune in. If, you know, something like a Versus, I think they really missed the opportunity to do it when everybody was at home during the pandemic. Like Versus came out of nowhere and just boom, because everybody's sitting at home. So let's watch this. This will be great. And I think that if they had decided, hey, let's do a Loveline while everybody's sitting here, it could have been a big deal. But they didn't. They missed that opportunity.
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear that about Adam Carolla, because as much as he's grown away from my points of views, I've grown up with him. And, you know, you don't want to find out that all of the celebrities you idolized as a kid were awful. I mean, I did an interview with Mark Summers, literally the nicest guy on the face of the planet. You know, if you told me anything bad about him, I wouldn't be able to believe it.
Mark Summers, Double Dare. And what was the show he did on Food Network?
Wrapped.
Like Snacks or Wraps or?
Yeah, Wrapped, I think it was called.
It was, but it was all about.
Unwrapped, sorry.
Unwrapped, yeah, yeah. And it was like candy production or whatever. But, yeah. You know, he was just his same Double Dare stuff. And I have seen him. Every once in a while during Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives, he'll show up at one with Guy. And yeah, I have never heard anything bad about Mark Summers. So
no, I know he had a long health battle with cancer, and I think he's dabbled in a little bit of radio in his older age, and he's a really fun follow on Instagram too. And so that makes me happy to hear about Adam Carolla. And I think, I mean, Shia, he's a lost cause. Fred, I can't. Auntie, I'm having honestly problems with this. I can't let go. When I was a kid, I used to get my dad to order me Wonder Years scripts on eBay that were signed, and I would sit there and read them and memorize them, and like I was obsessed.
Yeah,
but like you say, like where there's smoke, there's usually fire.
Yeah, he's a forest fire. So.
Oh God. Okay. Well, this was so much fun. I'd love to hear more Growing Pains. I mean, if we ever do this again, I think I'd even go older nostalgia, like Nick at Night level, you know.
Oh, Nick at Night's good. I mean, Nick everybody, Nick, just the origins of it, and I've kind of tried to dig into that because it started in Columbus, Ohio, and they came into a bunch of money that nobody knows where it came from. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe it came from Wexner or whatever, because they did start there. And, you know, they have been around, I think it started in like 78 or 79. So, I mean, they've had shows since the very early 80s. So they have been around a while.
They have. And I actually, I don't know if you saw the Orange Years documentary that came out a few years ago. I interviewed the director, Scott Barber, and that was fun to learn a lot about behind the scenes Nickelodeon and just how they got that documentary made. And then he also just did This Is Gwar, which came out this summer.
Oh, nice.
And they're fascinating.
Yeah, the only show that I really am interested in, an old Nickelodeon that I dig into at all, and I've talked about it a bit, is Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yes, so, I know you're a Kirk Fogg fan.
I am a huge Legends of the Hidden Temple. I think that is the greatest game show possibly that's ever been on any kind of kids network. I enjoyed it much, much more than Double Dare. No offense, Mark Summers. But I don't know. I am a huge Legend of the Hidden Temple fan. I'm saddened that the reboot sucked, and it's because they tried to make it an adult version, and they should have just kept it as the kids. Just a really good show.
So. Yeah, and they put it on some weird app, I think, too. It wasn't even like on Nickelodeon.
No.
It was weird. That was such a great show. Totally agree. And I don't know. Thank you so much for doing this with me. Like I said, I'd love to dive into Nick at Night sometime. And it was such a treat. And I thank you so much for indulging my nostalgia. And I'll be following along with you on the Patreon because it's my one and only source for blind items.
And tell everybody where they can find yours.
Yes. So I have a podcast called Cassandra Explains It All. And I also have, unfortunately, a podcast called Welcome to the Carterverse, which I didn't even bother asking about Aaron Carter because who cares?
I will tell you one thing really quickly about Aaron Carter before we go. Okay. Really quickly. So I saw a clip where he was performing a show the other night. This is maybe 3 or 4 nights ago at an amphitheater that looked to hold about 2,500 people. Maybe a little bit less. It's hard to tell just from looking at a backstage video. There were maybe 25 people there.
His dog just had a litter of puppies on his RV that he's traveling around the country in. Let's put it that way.
There you go. So
yeah, he's up to his Aaron Carter thing. So, but mostly I stay in the nostalgia lane. And I kind of stepped out of my comfort zone doing the interview with Taisha, but you know, like I've been in a horribly abusive relationship before, and it felt like an important thing for me to do. And I got a lot of good feedback about it. And people were very interested to hear about what goes on behind the scenes at Nickelodeon, especially in the 90s, which I'm sure you get asked about all the time.
Yeah. So we will have to do that sometime, but thank you so much for being on, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Good night, Auntie.
Good night.
That was such a treat and so much fun. I can't wait for Christmas, because post-recording, we decided that we are going to do a major Kirk Cameron / Growing Pains Cameron family deep dive for Christmas. It'll be a family affair. And so that's going to be amazing. Again, I just wanted to remind everybody, you can always find more of my content, including my interview with Ty at Cassandra Explains It All, patreon.com/ Cassandra Explains It All. You can go leave me a 5-star rating and review. And of course, you can follow along NT Lawyer on his podcast journey as well. So I will see you guys next time for Jungle to Jungle, which is going to be so much fun. The show is edited by me, Cassandra, and executive produced by Shauna Gutierrez. Later.
Where is she, Pam Serene? And who am I? That's not a secret I'll never tell. You know you love me. XOXO.